Radio. And now, Free Fire Radio. Radio. About to commence.
Good morning, North State, and welcome to Free Fire Radio and KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media and Free Fire Radio. It's also the home of Carl and Linda Bott. Good morning, 7:05 on April the 20th, 2011. Our phone numbers here are 530-605-4567, and we're streaming at KCNR1460.com. Now, if you go in there to the website, click on that, listen to us, and then you can get into the chat room very easily. Just go in and join. Just remember, civility, semi-civility is always required. And speaking of semi-civility, Bad Bob.
I have an observation.
Okay.
What?
It's really nice to drive at about 4:50 in the morning because you pretty much got the road to yourself.
Well, yeah, you know, and the way that you weave back and forth, that really helps. Okay, now what we got, a short sleeve shirt, and it's red.
Well, it's a polo, you know.
Okay, we're getting close to the famous Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah, yes, well, you know, it's kind of like that Easter thing, you know.
Yeah.
Easter,
well,
let's not forget Easter.
And speaking of Hawaiian shirts that are bright and lovely and something that you just can enjoy, here's Linda.
Well, thank you, honey. Are you just trying to fill up the airwaves with just some kind of...
No, I always come in with a little segue. You think about how cool you are.
Well, thank you. Of course, I have to go into the weather now, you know. For those people who are just waking up with us this morning on KCNR 1460, hello, and welcome to the program again. It's the extension of our Emergency Preparedness Week. We have a multitude of fabulous information that you're going to be getting today.
Plus,
40% chance of showers with high of 66, and tonight, 90% chance of showers. So if you put the pads out on your chairs, you might as well bring them in, because tonight we're going to have a low of around 48 degrees. Now, something came over my internet of this morning, and I would like to...
Your internet?
My email, the internet. Of course, we all are a part of the internet. All we have to do is get on the www. But this was an email that was sent to me and from a very reliable source, and it has been checked by both Snopes and another Truth or Fiction. Something that's happening, I just want you to be aware. This is the email. Kids are putting Drano, tin foil, and a little water soda in bottles and capping it up, leaving it on lawns. When you go to pick it up, the trash and the bottle is shaken just a little. In about 30 seconds or less, it builds up a gas and explodes with enough force to remove some of your extremities. The liquid that comes out is boiling hot as well. Don't pick up any plastic bottles that may be lying in your yard or in the gutter. Pay attention. Plastic bottle with the cap, a little Drano, a little water, a small piece of foil. Disturb it by moving it, and boom, you know. People are finding these bombs in mailboxes and in their yards, just waiting for you to pick them up, intending to put in the trash, but you're not going to make it. So, anyway, it was something that they actually have on Snopes' show and the Indiana State Police Bomb Squad, detonating one of these pranksters your face off.
They had a couple of instances of this in Reading, I think. Yeah, last year, wasn't it? That they found it and they had that on there. But, you know, it's always good to remind us about these things because, you know, sometimes people do stupid things for stupid reasons.
Hey, if we had a water bottle in our front yard, you bet I'd pick it up.
Hey, if we had a water bottle in the front yard, we could use it as a silencer. Oh, wait a minute,
we've had one in our ivy. We've had one in our ivy, and I thought, oh, God, somebody's just walking down the street and they stuck the water bottle in an ivy.
Is that why you had me go out there and get it?
No, I don't even know what happened to it. I know I didn't remove it. Well, I don't know, but still.
I don't know. We have, who knows?
Kind of
weird.
Look,
on our show today, we're going to take a break here. But on the show today, we're going to be starting off with our emergency preparedness this morning. And that'll go for about 45 minutes. And then we're going to have Patrick Jones of the Reading City Council, Gary Cadd. We're going to talk about what happened at the city council last night. Now, there were quite a few things agreed on, like Costco. They were talking about Costco, but they were talking about shutting down City Hall 2 days a month. They were talking about shutting down the convention center. These are cost-cutting measures, but what impact will that have on us? If it's not for 2 days a month, what if it's more than 2 days a month? Then we want to talk about, you know, some little bit happier news here, that they're hiring, There's two auto dealerships up for approval and home sales in Shasta County jump in March. All here in the next few minutes, right here on KCNR 1460. And this is Carl and Linda Bott, and this is Free Fire Radio.
Good morning, North State. You are listening to KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Radio. Hey, by the way, this portion of the show is brought to you by Tobacco and Brew. You know, the other day, I went into Tobacco and Brew and bought coffee. 16 ounces. That's how you get it. 16 ounces. They give you the big bags. It's the best deal in town, and the gals there will blend it and grind it to your specification. Fabulous place. Great coffee. We are going to be there Friday afternoon because, of course, as we segue into our survival week of what we've been doing, we have you're going to be able to touch it, feel it, find out all about more information in person on Friday afternoon. What time does that start, Carl?
Friday at noontime. We're going to have it all out there. We're going to have examples of different types of go bags. We're going to have examples of what you need to take out, different types of food. We're going to have handouts for everything. Okay. Now, before we get started, just I want to give good news, and then we'll get into our guest, Mark Kent, who is our emergency preparedness guy. Now, tomorrow we're going to have the Red Cross in and Chief Hansen, and then Friday we're going to get Jake Ryan and Mark back, and we're going to finish up this week. But here's two bits of good news. Home sales in Shasta County jump in March. And Kurt Largent of Keller Williams was the one they went to. Now, Kurt Largent has a show, a real estate show, on Saturday mornings from 9 to 10. And if you've not heard that show, you need to do it. I mean, this guy is a pit bull when it comes to real estate. And he said is that we were super busy in January, our busiest in 4 years. So when things were, you know, January is a good barometer for the year. So even though that some of them are short sales and foreclosures are still going up. The other two bits of good news, two auto dealerships up for approval, the Subaru and Volkswagen. So I think that's cool. Those are good. And the other thing is Mickey D's is hiring, 15 positions open at local restaurants. That's McDonald's. And so they are doing, they're having job seekers, they're having people fill out interviews. I think that's great. So all those three bits of good news there. All right. Speaking of good news, here he is.
Good morning.
The emergency preparedness guru of KCNR.
I've been called things guru as, you know.
We want to get you right up in there because we want to get every little bit of detail that you have to say today.
Okay.
We keep driving this home. We've got more information. I know that yesterday while I was on assignment, I was able to listen to portions of the show, and I find information just, you know, you can't get enough of it. You can never be too prepared. And that's something that through this week you're bringing to us to keep driving home just what we should really start. If nothing else, to start with one thing and build your bag.
Absolutely. That's always the first thing is the 72-hour bag.
Right. Now, we're going to take an early break here. And the reason I want to do that is because otherwise you take 2 minutes, we got to stop. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to come back. I have a lot of time for this next segment. And the Shasta Lake is 19 feet from the top of the dam. So it is 497 feet deep at the dam. So, less than 20 feet from the top of the dam. All right. Carl and the Bot, KCNR 1460. It's 7:17 in the morning on April 20th, and this is Free Fire Radio. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio and KCNR 1460. It's 7:20 in the morning on April the 20th. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Good morning. It's raining out there. It's like about 50 degrees. It looks like it's going to be raining today. This portion of the show brought to you by B&T Satellite. Dish Satellite, go local. Don't use that 800 number. Call 244-1988. Get a hold of Doug Tooley. Talk to him. He's the man. He's been in the business since 1985, except that time spent in the 82nd Airborne. He can get you free HD. You got to ask him about that. He's got great deals. 244-1988. It's local. Do not call the 800 number. It's real simple. Guarantees his work. Good guy. All right. Mark Kent.
Yes.
We're getting ready to start now. And okay, this is kind of going over. We talked essentially what are the basics you need for survival, whether it's you have to leave your home or in it.
Correct.
We talked about a go bag and the types of things that have to go into a go bag for, you know, 72 hours or less.
Sure.
One of the questions we've had come in here is talking about martial law. Now, you know what? This is one of those questions, Jimmy. That's a good question. And we will address this probably on tomorrow with the police, with Chief Hanson. We start talking martial law, what that is, where he can get into the legal definition.
Absolutely, yeah.
Hang in here till tomorrow, and we'll get to that one. But it is a good question. Just remind us.
Yeah.
And now today, though, what are we going to be talking about, Mark?
Well, we're going to talk more about the long-term storage. If you have to hunker down where you're at your home, and how to build a supply up to where, you know, you've got enough survival means for your family and yourself. For you know, the goal should be, in my opinion, at least a year's worth of stuff. And you know,
that's an awful lot of stuff.
It is, but you know, there's some really good benefits other than emergency preparedness. One of them is that it can save you a lot of money long term as well, because if you store food and start to rotate it, you can then start shopping the deals and the best buys at the store. So you can actually turn this into a real positive, whether there's an emergency or not, to where it'll save you quite a bit of money on food over the long term.
But I don't think people realize that a lot of the food you get, you know, if it's the generic brand, it's the same food. I mean, it's even made in the same plants. It's just bottled or canned under another name.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of different ways to go here that are, you know, a lot of money-saving aspects of this for the long term. But, you know, we talk about it as a year, because that should be the minimum amount, in my opinion, that you should be preparing for as a 6 months to a year scenario. So at the very minimum, 6 months. So, you know, when we talk about that, you know, we got to start thinking in a lot of different things to pull into that equation, because we know that the distribution system is very limited. We know that there's no more than 2 or 3 days on the shelves from the trucking industry. If the trucking industry breaks down through, you know, a strike or a natural disaster or anything like that, what happens is, if a panic does set in, the stores empty out very quickly. I mean, we've seen this over and over and over again in Katrina and many other natural disasters, that people start to hoard things immediately because they know that if they don't go into the store and get them right off the bat, that they're just going to disappear. I have a list that I'll give to everybody on Friday about the first 100 things that usually disappear in this type of situation.
Let me talk about this. Their supply idea is kind of almost like we have in the military, is that supply on demand is that is they the trucks are arriving literally the day or the night before when you need the supplies.
Right.
And you break them down for 2 or 3 days, and that's it, like you said.
That's it.
And in Hawaii, all it would take is a rumor in Hawaii, and we know this from living there, and then all the toilet paper disappears.
Yep.
All the tuna fish disappears because there's a rumor. There's
yep.
It's a shortage. And so people would go out, and on that island, that could be a real that could be a real problem.
It's a real problem. And, you know, we also have to think in terms of that, use that Hawaii example in terms of our local situation here as well, because we are now in a global distribution system. And so if, let's say that gas shoots up to $150 a barrel, I mean, my gosh, that'll never happen, right? But let's say that it did. That in itself could disrupt the distribution lines through the, you know, because we're getting our bananas from El Salvador and our guavas from Africa. You know, that in
and
itself.
And our money from China.
And our money from China,
Oh, did I say that? I'm sorry. That different subject.
Yeah, I mean, we could go into the dollar this morning.
Okay.
It was kind of
that's
sick.
Friday.
Yeah, okay.
Friday. We're going to talk about that.
So let's get back to building our long-term storage. I mean, we have a lot of considerations that we need to start taking into account when we start building this. You know, we want to have a cool, dry spot that we can start to gather this stuff in. You know, you might want to consider different types of containers to start with. Now, yesterday somebody said something about, you know, there's a lot of people out there taking advantage of this, fad, the survival thing. And there are, but there's a lot of ways that you can do this really cheaply and put it together yourself. We've done a lot of things with Mylar bags and storage buckets.
What bags?
They're called Mylar. It's the aluminum foil type bags.
Somebody just said, Elizabeth just wrote that it's the kind that your coffee comes in.
Correct.
Those kind there, once you empty them out, now they become...
You can reseal them again and actually use them again. You know, we've had one gal in our group that that's what she does. She's, you know, running on a shoestring, so she can't afford to go out and buy Mylar bags. I mean, you can get them on the internet for, you know, fairly reasonable anyway. That's what we did. But she was running on a tight budget, and so she went out and got the coffee bags free from Winco, and, washed them out, cleaned them up. They still smell a little bit like coffee, but, you know, for an emergency, I like the smell of coffee. And so you can then start put rice and beans and those things and reseal them, and you put those oxygenators in there as well, and it takes all the oxygen out of there so that it keeps the bugs out of them, and they'll store up to 15 years.
Okay, let's go to Elizabeth. Elizabeth, you're on
live.
Good morning.
I'm a huge fan of Mark's Survival and Preparedness class at the Tea Party meetings on Monday nights, and I've actually been working on my survival and preparedness for about 3 years, but I was kind of working on a little project as I was listening to your show, and, you know, folks can find really inexpensive food items. I find a lot of great deals at both Winco and Grocery Outlet. You can find the bags of Lipton soup mix, some of the Lipton rice mixes for, you know, 75 cents a piece, and like Mark had mentioned, you can find the Mylar bags at Winco. If you call Winco, ask for their bulk department, they will save their Mylar bags from their coffee for you. You cut them down with a pair of scissors and you use a Teflon iron to seal them up. So there's all kinds of inexpensive ways to make really small packages of food that would be easy to carry that you would only have to add water to.
Well, I think that, you know, great idea, Elizabeth, first of all, and what Mark's talking about. And I hope that people, you know, you don't have to be writing this stuff down, my friends. One, we're archiving it, and two, on Friday at noontime at Tobacco and Brew, we're going to be there with a bunch of handouts with these types of ideas that you need to, you know, talk to your friends, you know, share it with the other people that what we're doing, and then and be able to see everything on Friday. And we'll come together. We'll probably put together something, too, for, you know, that people can have at a nominal price.
Very good. So back to the oxygen absorber.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
You can, you know, you get these bags, and you can buy bulk foods at Costco or Winco, and then you put them in the bags with these oxygen absorbers. And you can even use those if you don't have those oxygen absorbers. You know the hand warmer things that you use to go skiing?
Yeah.
Those actually work just as well. You can put them in with your rice or your beans, and those will absorb all the oxygen and really extends the life of storage. So, you know, if you get a 50-pound sack of rice, and, you know, that might cost you $20-$25 right now, and that will fill up, you know, a couple of those Mylar bags and storage containers, and that's a lot of food. And so,
Mark, are you going to be showing us on Friday some of these secrets?
Yes, absolutely. We'll be bringing of this in.
That's a good visual. That's a good show and tell. We need to see it.
Yeah, we'll have that. We're going to have the handouts. Okay, we're getting ready to break for the news. Our guest is Mark Kent, and this is our third day of emergency preparedness. We'll go on with about another 20 minutes of this, and then at 8 o'clock, we've got Patrick Jones and Gary Cadden here to talk about what happened at the city council meeting last night. Carl and Linda Bott, KCNR 1460, and this is Free Fire Radio. Welcome back at KCNR 1460 and Free Fire Radio right here. At 7:35 in the morning on April the 20th, it is about 53 degrees out there. It looks like it's going to be raining there. This portion of the show brought to you by... Did we already do Tobacco and Brew?
Yes, we did. We talk about 16 ounces.
That's right. But you know, it's a great place. We're going to be down there at noon because we're going to be
doing
Friday. We're going to be doing our show and tell for emergency preparedness.
Let's give you a little bit about the forecast. Today, 40% chance of showers with the temperatures... rising to around 66 degrees. Tonight, showers low of around 48 degrees with a south-southwest wind between 7 and 11 miles per hour. Thursday, we're going to have 30% chances of showers before 11 a.m. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low around 45. Looks like we may have kind of a rainy day, but Thursday night, partly cloudy. And the weather's always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. By the way, Friday night, 474-5546 is the reservations hotline out there. And Rick Hill will be playing his lovely guitar and his Spanish flair new songs. And it's a great place to go eat. Rick Hill out in Anselmo Vineyards.
It's going to be great. Hey, our guest Mark Kent. We're talking a little bit longer range, taking care of ourselves. Absolutely. In our third iteration of Emergency Preparedness Week.
Yeah, some other things that we need to consider, too, as well as what we've been talking about, is right now would be a good time to start planting a garden as well, because you can supplement your long-term storage with your garden. I mean, my corn is already about an inch high right now, and, you know, I'm liking the weather right now because it's I don't have to water much. It's been pretty good. Every time it's just starting to dry out, the rain comes again. So that's a. With that, you can also supplement the long-term storage by canning foods. I mean, my mother and my wife and my sister all can foods. It's kind of almost a family tradition at this point. They make soap and do other things, too. I mean, sometimes I feel like I'm living in the Appalachians. But
wonderful to have that knowledge and capability.
Absolutely. And so we're trying to pass that on down to the kids and the grandkids.
Well, we should learn how to can.
Well, you know what?
We put up
Lori
stuff.
Boyne gave us her... Her preserves that she made that was, you know,
it was a lovely garden.
Yeah.
Very extensive
beautiful.
Garden.
You haven't tasted preserves until you've tasted Linda's homemade Marion berry jelly. I'll have to. It's almost like
that's Mark. That's Mark's Linda, not my Linda. Here.
Yeah, my Linda.
Oh, well, I'd have to taste your Linda's Marion berry jelly.
I give that out to a few of my friends, and it's almost like doing a drug deal. You know, we have to smuggle it out, you know, out of the pantry.
We have to meet at midnight. Everybody's
cool.
Got weapons.
We had pomegranate jelly. Wasn't it what we had with... No, somebody else makes up pomegranate jelly, but Lori gave us a really special... I can't think of it right now, but it was a special exotic flower that she had made jam from, and it was exquisite.
Yeah, you know, some of the stuff that's homemade and canned is just the best. You know, I mean, then we do, you know, all kinds of stuff, zucchinis and pickles, and it's just as good as out of the store, better, you know.
And you're just kind of limited by what your imagination is. Okay, so, all right, so gardens can do it. Food dehydrators, is that something that's good?
Yeah, I mean, the things we need to consider is their dry storage, like we talked about with the Mylar bags, and oxygenation of the goods that you're storing, so that long term, you know, you don't have any problem with bugs or food going bad. Dry ice is another way of doing that as well. With dry ice, you can put that also in the containers, and there's a method to do it. I'm not going to go through the whole method, but that also does the same thing. You know, cold storage is another way, freezers or refrigerators, or a root cellar, for example. We actually have a root cellar. And so that is another good way of storing your gardening stuff, as well as some canned goods and as well. And you can store like a pumpkin for up to 6 or 8 months in a root cellar, for example, and it's still good. So freezing is another way to do this stuff. You want to fresh garden vegetables can be frozen. There's a lot of them that are good that way, or fruit. We do a lot of fruit, strawberries. I have blueberries, that kind of thing, too. So if you're doing dry goods and stuff you're buying from the store, you can do that a little bit at a time. And you slowly start to get some inertia here as you start to do this, and you supplement it with fresh garden stuff. And I'll tell you, just doing the garden by itself is a great way to go, whether you're looking for, emergency preparedness or not. It's great food. So.
Okay, look, we've got a caller on line one. Brian, you are on KCNR.
Hey, how's it going?
We're going fine, Brian. What do you have?
I do a lot of long-term storage, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Hey, the one thing, too, a lot of people aren't realizing is about desiccants. And desiccant is a moisture-absorbing material, especially if you're dealing with beans and legumes and other things that have a moisture content above 10%. It's kind of important to make sure that they're using that as well. And all I do is I take a little medicine bottle, put in the silica gel. You can go to Michael's and get silica gel. It's in granules, and they use it for drying plants and other things. And I put a little piece of material over it, zip tie it on there, throw it at the bottom. It's really important to keep the oxygen absorbers and the desiccant separate. I put the desiccant on the bottom and the oxygen absorber on the top when I'm doing long-term storage in Mylar bags.
I've never tried that method or heard of that one. That's a new one on me.
Yeah, it's really important because it's not just removing the oxygen. If you have moisture in there that's in the actual material, it can cause breakdown, too, and change the functionality of flavor. The one thing that's really important about canning, too, is I did some research. It's amazing how quickly you lose vitamins and minerals within the first 72 hours of the plant's picking.
Right.
So also choosing if you're going to if you're going to can stuff that you're going to buy, you need to ask questions about how long ago was this stuff picked, how was it stored, because temperature and time makes a big difference on fresh vegetables.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we do our canning, we pull it straight out of the garden and we try to time it, you know, whether it's fruit or whatever, to, you know, do it within, you know, at least one day of picking.
And that's what we do. We have converted our backyard into a large garden area with trees and raised planter beds, and we grow quite a bit. And now this is another thing people need to understand. When I was in Russia for quite a while last summer, I got a chance to watch their culture, and most everybody there is very self-sufficient about growing their own vegetables. Just about every house I was at had a garden. And they only grow, they don't get into the real extravagant things to grow. They grow the main staples, large amounts of them to get them through the winter, like potatoes, onions, garlic, and so on. So it's really important to pick what you're going to grow and do to be more efficient.
Yeah, I have relatives that are actually Russian, and they've gone back there and told me that it's almost mandatory, you know, for survival to everybody have a half-acre garden, pretty much is what I've heard.
Yeah. Hey, Brian, thank you so much for the phone call. It was a great phone call, but we got to take a break here, my friend. But thanks for your comments. Very, very pertaining
to
what we're
good
doing.
Good stuff, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, great stuff. Yeah. Okay, we've got to take a break here. That's KCNR 1460 and Carl and Linda Bott at 7:42 in the morning, and this is Free Fire Radio. KCNR 14. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Phone line 0530-605-4567. Hey, our guest is Mark Kent. We're going to roll this up here in this last 5 minutes, and we want to talk a little bit about those things that you may need.
Yeah, we got a list here of the first 100 items that usually disappear when you have an emergency. So these are the kind of the things that you might want to consider, you know, starting out with. Again, this is a process. You know, unless you're a millionaire and you're just going to go down and spend, you know, a bunch of money, then, you know, it's going to take a little while to accumulate everything. It's not as bad as everybody thinks. It's, you know, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step type of thing, you know, how to eat an elephant sort of deal.
When you say that these are the first things that disappear, are you talking about usually in your local grocery store or off the shelves? Okay.
Yes.
We'll also have a list Friday of these things that
you're
in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we've got all these listed out for everybody. And you can get a lot of this stuff online. All you got to do is Google it. It starts popping up. This thing, survival is becoming very chic, so to speak, because of the fact is that when you start looking at all the disasters that are going around in the world and earthquakes and everything else, I mean, another thing would a pandemic, a flu pandemic, for example. We haven't even talked about that, how that could come in. So anyway, the first thing that usually goes are the generators. Okay, because if the electricity goes down, you want to keep your freezer going. And so otherwise you're going to have a huge barbecue, invite all your friends, you know, and if you've got any beef in there.
Remember after 9/11.
Yeah, absolutely. You can call me when that happens and I'll be over with all my grandkids.
Right.
So, you know, the next thing is water filters are the next thing to go, because water filters are typically, if we have a problem with the water system of any sort, that's the first thing that you're going to want, because water is, you know, what you have to have. You can go without food for quite a while, water 3 or 4 days, and you're done. So that happens. Portable toilets are the next thing to go. After that, it starts. Firewood is another thing that starts to get hoarded. It doesn't come off the grocery shelves, but people start to hoard their firewood. The next thing would be oil lamps, wicks, lamps, kerosene, those type of things, where you can have some kind of a light without having to depend on your electricity. Coleman fuel, you know, you can't stockpile too much of this stuff like the kerosene and the fuel, because it doesn't really go bad over the long term, the kerosene and the Coleman fuel. And it's always in demand. You could even sell it if you wanted to get rid of it.
I would think batteries and stuff like that would be
that's
top list there.
Yeah, you know, the batteries are actually a little farther down, but yeah, they're one of those things that go. I mean, we got a list of 100. Those are 38.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Okay.
So you know, the next things, and again, this is a list that was compiled. We don't know if this is, you know, completely accurate either. I mean, we're just trying to show you the things that do disappear.
Based on history.
You know, can openers is, and you wouldn't think it, you know, can openers and hand egg beaters, a whisk. I mean, I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's on the list.
Well, the can opener, especially because
yeah.
Everybody uses electric can opener. If you don't, you know, how many times have you tried to use your can opener and that's the day it breaks?
The egg whisk is what I was kind of wondering about because I'm thinking a fork would probably do it, but
that's,
you know.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. So, you know, after that, you start seeing the syrups and the honey and the sugar and the things like that going, and then rice, beans, and wheat are next, vegetable oil. Charcoal for barbecues starts to become a big thing. Then water containers. Then a grain grinder, a non-electric grain grinder, seems to be up there on the top of the list. So,
well, you know, I tell you what, Mark, we've run to the end of this segment of our show, and I just one is the reason we're having these shows is because emergency preparedness is something everybody should do.
Absolutely.
You know, after watching what's happened in Japan, you go, well, yeah, how can that hit us? And then you look at the tornadoes and the horrible weather in the southeast, and then the fires in Austin, Texas, where people are literally, and I'll say it again, we're running down the street and getting in their cars and leaving without anything.
I don't think there's a possibility of an earthquake in California.
No, that can't happen. And what we want to do is to try and open up people's minds and have people go, oh yeah, you know, we can do this, we can do this. Mark is our expert on this week. Now tomorrow we're going to have the Red Cross in to talk about what their programming is, what their plans are, and their shelters. And also Chief Peter Hansen's going to talk about what happens in an emergency. And then Friday we're going to finish up with Mark and Jake Ryan. We're going to talk not only some preparedness, but also hardening your home. Some of the things you can do, security in your home, and some financial things. And then at noon.
At noon, we're going to end this week with the emergency preparedness, where you will see products that you can purchase. You can start to bring out your books and figure out what works for you right now and learn from the experts, meet the experts, start to plan now. And that begins this week, and it begins on Friday at Tobacco and Brew at 12 o'clock. Come and check out. Thank you so much, Mark.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. We won't be selling any of these things.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Oh, okay.
But they're items that you can purchase someplace
else.
Okay. Right. We will not be selling anything. We'll be giving away things.
Okay.
So. Yeah.
Okay.
Carl and the Bot, KCNR 1460, and this is Free Fire Radio. KCNR 1460 and Carl and Linda Bott, 7:55 in the morning on April the 20th. Okay, our guest in our studio.
We're talking about the spaghetti feed.
That's right. Mike DiMatteo and Ed Reynolds. Good morning, gents.
Good morning.
How are you
morning.
Doing?
Hey, good morning.
Hi, Linda.
Okay, well, we're talking about the Relay for Life fundraiser.
Here. Right.
At the Sons of Italy Shasta Lodge. Guns and Hoses. From the Reading Police Officer and Reading Firefighters Association.
Yes, this is our second year teaming up with the police department and fire department. Last year was very successful. We hope to have a real good turnout this weekend, even though it's Easter weekend. But we've got so much support in the community, raffle prizes, everything. It's for such a good cause. It's a wonderful cause. Now, my wife, personally, she's been very ill the last few years with cancer, and I have to be involved with this. I get sentimental here, but we just have to have the support, and we want to help these poor people that are suffering out there.
Well, absolutely. So, Mike, tell us a little bit about it.
This is the second year that the Peace Officers Association has joined up with the Fire Department or the Firefighters Association. They've been doing it for years. Last year was a successful hit for the both of us. This year's the same. We on the Police Officers Association feel that we either have a family member or friend who have been affected by cancer, so obviously we're going to do our part and give back and do what we can to solve this and keep going.
Well, it looks like it's going to be a wonderful night. This is what a beautiful community event is about. Here we've got the Reading Police Officers and the Reading Firefighters Association teaming up for Relay of Life for the American Cancer Society. An amazing thing. And this is a fundraiser. So it starts from 5 to 8. And, of course, it's at the Sons of Italy Hall. And we know if you've ever been to the Sons of Italy Hall, excuse me, you have a great time. As soon as you walk in, as soon as you park in the parking lot, you know it's a party.
Yes. We're very friendly. It can't be all the wine in back of the bar.
Yeah, it's absolutely the best bar in town.
When your car stops, you get out, and it's party hat time.
Yeah.
Now, this is going to start at 5 p.m. on April 23rd, this Saturday, and it's going to go till 8 p.m., so you can dine in or take out. And we're talking about a great cause here. And it's only $10 per ticket.
So the $10 per ticket, let's just talk about people are thinking about it's Easter weekend, I've got this or I've got that. I really want to come and support this. What's nice about this is if you can double stack your night, you come at 5, buy a ticket, you're going to do spaghetti?
Oh, yes. Spaghetti and meatballs, salad, garlic bread. And we have to-go boxes. If you walk out the front door, you'll see my truck loaded with to-go boxes.
To-go boxes. And you know what? The guys have been so generous today to bring us 2 complimentary tickets, which we are going to give away on the air right now. We have another caller calling in, but your call, 605-4567. Please do call, and we've got 2 tickets for this Saturday night, April 23rd, 5 o'clock. You can drive through. But the other thing is that we do encourage you to go because there is a bake sale and raffle prizes. And we're trying to raise funds here for the American Cancer Society.
Oh, yes. Some wonderful cakes. Last year, one of the ladies' cakes went for $75. Gorgeous cake.
Didn't we do this last year?
Yes, you did.
It cost me. Okay, if somebody's calling in for the tickets, 605-4567. Do we have a winner?
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
Mike DiMatteo. How long have you been with the Police Officers Association?
I've been there 9 years. I just currently sat on the Peace Officers Board for 7 years. So I'm here on behalf. I'm also a member of Sons of Italy, so kind of works out well.
Wow. You know what? You guys, hats off to you. You do wonderful, wonderful things. Again, the Sons of Italy, this is where the event's going to be. It's Relay for Life American Cancer Society. But what the event is called is...
You mean the Relay for
Relay for
Relay
Life.
For Life.
Relay for Life, Linda.
Okay, and I was thinking there was a specific name for the event, named the event.
No, it's just Relay for Life. And right. Our sauce is homemade.
Yeah.
This is going to be a great event, my friends.
Oh, yeah.
5 to 8 p.m. Tickets are $10, $10 per ticket. Call 530.
We have a winner.
221-5327 for tickets or 209-3344. A great event.
And here they are, Carl, right here. I'm waiting for the callers to call in.
Okay, we've got a winner.
Hey, Phil, congratulations. There'll be 2 tickets at the front desk for you here at the station. At 1326 Market Street. That's Phil. Congratulations. And so, again, you're going to be working around town and being on, I'm sure, doing the press circuit here.
Oh, yes.
Let's talk about...
This is KCNR, 1426. I'm sorry, we've got a break for the news. Carl and Linda Black.
...have been torched already by numerous wildfires. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
KCNR, Shasta Redding.
Button on your...
KCNR 1460. The chat room is open. KCNR1460.com. You're listening to Carl and Linda Bott here every morning from 7 to 9, and we are filled with a fabulous week. Emergency preparedness, what's going on in town, the spaghetti feed at the Sons of Italy for the Reading Police Officer and Reading Firefighters Association, and whammo. Today, if you're just tuning in and you want to know what the weather's going to be, 40% chance of showers with a high. Near 66 degrees tonight, 90% chance of showers with a low of around 48. And the weather is always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards.
Good morning. Yeah, good morning. Phone lines here are 605-4567, 530-605-4567 for you people out of state. We're streaming at KCNR1460.com. Get in there and join the chat room, as many, many, many of you have. April the 20th. Now, and we finished up our for today's segment on emergency preparedness. Another form of emergency preparedness is going to the city council meetings and finding out what goes on there. Yesterday they had a big meeting and talking about closing the convention center, closing City Hall part-time, a number of different things. And we were fortunate enough to have, besides our regular correspondent, Gary Cadd, we've also got Patrick Jones, city council member. Well, I invited to come on today because I knew this one was going to be a somewhat contentious meeting last night, or am I mistaken?
No, you're correct. It was a very tough meeting. And good morning, Carl. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning.
Bob, Gary, everybody else. appreciate the opportunity to come in and speak today. And, you know, we're facing yet another round of cuts. We've made many, many cuts in the last 4 years, and we're roughly over $3 million down in a shortfall. I think the actual number may be about $3.3 million in a shortfall. And the cuts today, while we've made larger cuts than that in the past, they come after a considerable amount of cutting already. And so these cuts are very tough, very difficult, and very few options left today.
And just keep in mind also that this is the 10th budget-cutting session that the city's had to go through since the first part of 08.
Yeah, well, there are how much are our revenues down since then?
Well, you have to imagine starting really in late 2006, but certainly in earnest in 2007, we had double-digit quarter-after-quarter declines. Today, we're seeing a bit of a flattening after, you know, a solid 4 years of decline, and we've had to cut out roughly $20 million out of the general fund, a very substantial...
In the last 2 years?
In the last 4 years.
The last 4 years, okay.
And roughly, as Gary says, roughly 10 budget-cutting scenarios have had to occur. And today, those cuts mean that the easy stuff has already been done, and today it really is going to come down to personnel and what can we do to minimize those impacts on our city workers and the impacts to the services that we provide for the residents of Reading. And that is the difficult decision. And that essentially is why last night we decided to possibly close the city hall for one day a week, every other week. Those scenarios are yet to be fully vetted as we determine other cuts throughout other departments so that we can see where we can minimize these staffing levels. So those are unknown, but we did that because we could keep more people working as opposed to massive layoffs.
Okay. We want to get into this after the break. That was a big announcement yesterday, but also the closing of the convention center early next year. We'll also, as we go along, if we have time, talk about the library and Costco, that move too, because that, you know, it's just one thing after another. And I've got a question about the vehicle licensing fee also, impact, the possible impact of that. This is Carl Lindebot, PCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. It's 8:10 in the morning on April 20th, and this is Free Fire Radio. Carl and Linda Bott, 8:12 in the morning on April the 20th. It's about 53 degrees out there. It's raining today. Our guest, City Council member Patrick Jones, and our gadfly, our correspondent, Gary Cadd, who goes to all of these meetings. And Patrick, one of the things we were talking about before we left was the shutting down, well, the proposal to shut down City Hall a couple of days a month.
Yes.
But also, from what I saw on that, it said a couple of days a month or more.
Yeah, it's possible. Right now, this is very preliminary. And so, as we go through this process to balance the budget, there are uncertainties. Realizing savings from Measure A, we're not sure what that will be right now. We're with two bargaining groups at the moment, and depending on those savings, it could be as little as $200,000. It could be as much as $800,000. So there are some variables out there. And depending on some of these other scenarios, other departmental budget cuts that are going to be introduced or proposed by department heads, that will determine most likely how many days City Hall will be closed a month. Now, keep in mind, we're going to save public safety in this. Now, 60% at least of the general fund is eaten up by police and fire, and we're going to set them aside. And essentially, all these cuts are going to come from the 40%. They're going to take that burden, and it'll be laid upon them. And we'll spare public safety in this round. Again, over a $3 million shortfall, considerably sizable, very difficult. We're trying to minimize the layoffs to our city workers. And Missy MacArthur, Mayor MacArthur, introduced the idea of shutting City Hall for a day a week. And that was the general concept. And depending on how the budget flushes out, and Gary knows this as well as I do, he goes to all these meetings, you know, that may be one day a week. We're hoping for every other week, but it's unforeseen yet. We wanted to let our workers understand and know that the severity of this shortfall and the possibilities of things to come. And it will be a difficult time this year. And we've had tough times in the past, and you know, these shortfalls are on a part that healthcare costs are rising, and we have a defined benefit. And when that occurs, the city has to pick up that shortfall, and it was sizable this year, and it will be next year as well.
Yeah, it was $1 million this coming year additional on what we were paying already.
Right.
But the thing that you got to keep in mind also, Patrick's talking about cuts. It's what we talked about last night, cuts in closing City Hall. But you must remember, too, that public safety is down. It's not up where it's supposed to be. Right now, our public safety, as far as the police department, is down for a population that we probably had here in Reading back in about 1985. And we're going to be losing three more police officers, two to retiring and one moving to Fort Bragg, California, to become the chief over there. So we're making cuts, but actually we need to be adding. To be safer, we need to add. We need to open a fire station that's closed. We have firemen that are laid off. So this is very definitely a real problem for the city of Reading, and we need to be able to affect these changes and keep them and keep us on solid ground.
Everything that, you know, I mean, I don't know how much fluff is left, you know, that you can get down into.
There isn't.
If there's no fluff left, okay. So we lay, you know, so means is one under the measures A and B is that negotiations, if that's used, is negotiations means that unions pay more for their and their retirement and their health. That's one thing. The second thing is, laying people off one day a week, every other week. But if the first two don't work and you have to lay people off one day a week every week, that changes the status of the worker, doesn't it, or the city employee?
Yeah, it very well could. And again, we're not to that point yet. But, you know, a worst-case scenario, let's say, is that the realization in savings is not forthcoming in Measure A with the two bargaining units that we have. The health care costs continue to rise, which they're expected to. The economy continues to be very flat. The scenario possibly could be that we have to close Fridays at City Hall, which could mean that a full-time employee is reduced to a three-quarter time, and that's quite a burden for that employee. Now, that still beats the scenario of laying that person off. They still have a job, and it really helps the city when the economy does improve that we still have a very well-qualified worker that's there ready to go back up to full-time. So it's the better scenario of letting a person go in entirely, and those are the severities of the budget today.
Right.
And so these are tough decisions, and these do affect lives, and we're trying to do what's best for the city residents and for the city workers.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. John, good morning. You're live on Free Fire Radio.
Good morning, Carl, Linda.
Morning.
Gary, Patrick, Bad Bob. Is my time up now?
Okay. Hey, thanks for the phone call, John. We'll talk to you. Oh, no. Go on.
Patrick.
Yes, sir.
Look, there's a 800-pound gorilla sitting in the room that seems to be overlooked constantly. Isn't it time for City Council to review city staff competence, performance, and make necessary corrections for poor performance? We have a city attorney who creates policies that embroil the city in costly suits, a financial planning staff that seems to do little planning. When is there an accounting for performance? I mean, it seems to me, rather than just make a blanket layoff, which seems to be a chicken's way out of this thing, why don't we look at competence and why we're in some of the mess we are? We can blame it on the economy all we want, but there's been some really bad performances by staff, and I think it's time that you guys on the city council do your job and start paying attention to the incompetence and make some adjustments.
Well, John, I really wish you would tell me what you really think. the reality today is that, and obviously some people may view it as that, but the reality of this recession, global recession, is that it is such a magnitude that it is very hard to anticipate these levels of decline. And while I've probably been the most conservative on council and certainly have been criticized for that, I won't be criticized as much today for trying to be very frugal in years gone by. And I was critical of staff as well, like you are, that we needed to be more conservative years ago and tougher in our negotiations to help us not see the problems that we're seeing today. So your point is well taken, and it could certainly be well argued. But the reality is these cuts and this recession is so severe that I don't know if anybody could have totally predicted the depth of this recession. And,
I agree, Patrick, but we can't continue to use it as an excuse to allow people who are not doing their job to continue in their job, drawing monies out of the city coffers.
Well,
that could be better used.
And I agree, you know, and as you know that I asked all management to take a 7% pay cut, and I didn't get anywhere with that. Council did not support that, and I would like to see more from management, and you know, and I certainly don't agree with staff, you know, on a routine basis, you know, and I read my staff reports very thoroughly, and you know, and but your point is well taken, and I agree with much of it.
Okay. Appreciate the job you're doing, Patrick. Keep up the good work.
Hey, John, thanks for the phone call. We've got to take a break. Carl and DeBott, KCNR 1460. It is 8:20 in the morning. Our guests are Gary Cadd and Patrick Jones. This is Free Fire Radio. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. Carl and Linda Botts. 8:24 in the morning. Our guest, Gary Cadd and Patrick Jones, were talking, of course, the city council meeting, but there's a lot of other questions, too. Let me answer the first question that came on the chat room. The part about getting the hourly people are laid, you know, get laid off or furloughed, and what about management? From, according to Patrick, you know, quickly here, is that they were asked to take a cut in their pay. They refused, and the city council did not back that up. Is that correct?
That is correct. I did ask for, you know, 7% across the board on unrepresented, and council can enact that at any time. I did not have enough support from council to do so.
And they chose not to do that, and then the managers turned around, and they're starting a union, right?
They are.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
That is correct.
Okay, let's go to who's first? Don. Don, we've got our phone lines filled up. Don, you're on. You wanted to ask a question about the police station.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Don here in Reading. Yes, this is primarily to Patrick Jones. Regarding the proposed purchase move for the police department to Costco facility, I would like to know the justification for doing that from your point of view, Mr. Jones, in terms of knowing that all of the law enforcement services are on Court Street, West Street, the jail, the court systems, the attorneys, etc., are on the west side. Why would you and any other council members support the idea of moving the police department to a facility the size of Costco? That's number one. Number two, will the city or whoever purchases it make sure that that building is, shall we say, earthquake-proof?
Yes, it will be.
Totally retrofitted to fit the needs of the police department. Number three, has Mr. Chief Hansen been consulted? I never see in the paper or anywhere the feelings or thoughts of any of the police department members about moving to the east side.
Well, those are all
such
good.
Such a huge facility.
All good questions, Don, and I'll take the last one first and we'll go backwards. How's that? The chief is 100% behind this new acquisition. He likes it very much. He's seen what we can do, what California, other cities have done in California for retrofitting Costco buildings specifically, and he is 100% behind. His exact words were, this is a win-win-win scenario. And so that was very important to have the chief on board. The situation about downtown is that if we were going to build downtown, we would have to do a new freestanding structure. And the estimated costs on that are somewhere between $30 and $40 million, and we simply do not have the funds. They've never been able to be identified. They never have, and that's why this problem is persisted, and it's why the department is still in the dilapidated building that they are in. It is not earthquake-proof, and it is unsafe. The Costco building will be retrofitted to meet all of the essential service standard upgrades that are required by law. It is larger than is necessary today, but in the time that passes, it's hard to estimate the growth that the Reading area will have, and it essentially will be a center a law enforcement justice center where other agencies could possibly sublease into the building. I am supportive of the process because we have a way to pay for the building itself with the redevelopment agency. We've made those findings last night, and possibility with some monies left over to begin the retrofitting process so that we can actually accomplish the goal that no other council in the past has ever been able to accomplish, and we have a legitimate chance of doing so. In the same time, Costco moves, which is a free standalone idea, and they're staying in town and expanding their outfit, and they will continue to sell goods and help Reading with those tax dollars, which in essence puts more police and fire on the ground. And so I've considered this a very good move, and I've liked that building for quite some time. It wasn't described early on in the process because the building wasn't available at the time. Once the loop-on ramp at Oasis Road was near completion, as it is today and will be soon completed, then Costco came to City Hall and started the process to look to see if they could relocate there, and they're making progress today. That had an interest for them to move, which allowed their building to become available, which perked my interest. The deed restriction that some people talk about was going to be on that building no matter who buys the building. Deed restrictions mean that the value of the building will be decreased, and that will help us buy that building. The appraisal is yet to come in. We're waiting for that as we speak. So we can pick up this building at a very reasonable price that helps us retrofit the building later on.
Okay. One of the things people ask, and we've only got like about 45 seconds left, and we have to take a break for the news, hard break, and then we have Bill when we come back. Please, Bill, wait for us, and we'll get you. You'll be the first person on the other side of the break. The cost of are we putting money? We're making this really easy on Costco. They were going to move anyway, though, right?
We're not making this easy on Costco. Costco is a business, and they are going to be on their own. When they move, they have to pay for all their entitlements. They have to purchase their land. They're going to have to spend a lot of money in the city of Limits, which will be a help for us and put people to work. We're simply interested in their old building if we can get a good price.
Okay. Our guests, Patrick Jones and Gary Cadd, we're taking a break for the news. Carl and Linda Bott, and this is Free Fire Radio. And welcome back at 8:35 in the morning on April 20th. This portion of the show brought to you by Cypress Square Barbershop, right off of Athens Avenue. It's man's last stronghold, my friends. D.C., Tim and the Man in Black give great haircuts. They give discounts to veterans. They support our community. You have a great time, and it's a great place. That's Cypress Square Barbershop, man's last stronghold. Our guest today, Gary Cadd, our correspondent to the city council, and we snagged in here Reading City Councilman, Patrick Jones. Okay, before we get to Bill, we had something you wanted to say about REU that gave an award out last night, Gary?
Yes, Ed. This past February, there was 21 teams from 9 high schools across 3 Northern California counties that participated in the Reading Regional Science Bowl. It was held out at Simpson University. And the youngsters from Enterprise High School are the ones who won. The coach was David Peck. Team captain was Ronell Botcher, Ellis Janae, Ross Martin, Anthony Cellini, and Monica Stant. And these kids did a fantastic job. And REU donated $500 to the winning team. And then also the winning team has an all-expenses-paid trip to Washington, D.C., sponsored by the U.S. Department of Energy. So congratulations to the winning team, and good luck when they head to the Nationals. It was just something good that was coming out of with REU last night.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go to the phones. Bill, thanks for waiting. Bill, you're on live. Bill? Hello, Bill?
Maybe Bill got an all-expense-paid vacation to D.C.
Hey, Bill, are you there?
I'm still here.
Okay, you're on, Bill. You're on live.
Okay. Hi. Let's see. Patrick and Gary Cadd are there, right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. With the city charter, I know the city council put together a committee to investigate whether they, to make recommendations whether they should have a city charter or not. But my understanding is that the voters could go through a process to write a city charter too. Could you review how that process would work?
Well, you've got it pretty close to right, and then we're all learning about charter and charter issues and what to be aware of, what to be concerned with, what to be hopeful for with the charter. These meetings have been ongoing now for quite some time. Gary Cadd, myself, many city residents have attended these, union members as well. And essentially this committee will wrap up their work here shortly, and then they will make a presentation to city council, and that may be for a charter or a split vote or against the charter, one way or the other. The council then can decide to put on the ballot a committee, a commission, if you will, to write the charter, and that is a possibility we'll see. The council itself could also write a charter and then put it on the ballot for people to vote. And those are essentially the two scenarios that are upcoming. I suspect within the next month or month and a half, the committee will wrap up their work and report to council, and we'll go from there.
Uh-huh. I thought there was a petition process where the voters could do it without the city council.
They can. They can put signatures together. In fact, Gary Cadd has informed me that that is only for the commission to be formed. The voters can approve that.
Yes. When you're starting a charter, there's two ways that you can move forward to start a charter. You can either have a charter commission, which we would have folks put their names up, and there would be an election to elect 15 members to a charter commission, mm-hmm. or the city council could put a committee together to write a charter, and then they could put it on the ballot. So those are the two ways that you start a charter and you initiate the charter. Once you have a charter in place, then there's two ways of being able to change or add to a charter, and that is the city council could put an initiative on the ballot where we the people would vote to change it. The city council cannot change the charter. We the people would do it, or we the people could start an initiative and gather signatures to put it on the ballot, and then it would go on the ballot and go from there. So we the people can change a charter once it's in place, but we the people cannot put a charter together. It's either got to be a charter commission or the city council or the governing body, if you will, it has to move forward with it.
Okay, so all the voters can do with their petition is get a commission elected.
Correct.
Or elect a commission to write the charter.
Yeah, right. if the voters approve it, then they would be approving of the commission. It would go forward. And,
right.
and we're yet to see what council would do as well.
All right. I think I answered my question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill, for your phone call. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back. Charles is on. We've got some stuff in the chat room, and a couple other things we wanted to cover here in our before we run out of time at 9 o'clock. This is KCNR 1460, Carl and Linda Bott, 8:39 in the morning, and this is Free Fire Radio. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. This portion of the show brought to you by B&T Satellite 244-1988. Go to the local guy, Doug Tooley, puts in Dish Satellite. That's 244-1988.
We're going to have showers today, of course, 40% chance with a high of 66. And tonight, 90% of showers with a low of 48. Currently 53 degrees here at the station. This is KCNR 1460, and we are fully open on our chat room, KCNR1460.com, and taking your calls.
Okay, our guest, Patrick Jones, Reading City Council member, and Gary Cadd, our correspondent. And let's go to the phones. Charles, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
You're on.
Yeah, last night during the intermission there at City Council, I had just heard about something involving the existence of some closed-door meetings involving the Regional Climate Action Plan and so forth, and I'd like to see if Gary would care to elaborate on that.
Yeah, Charles, I know what you're talking about. It's the Regional Climate Action Plan, and the county is having these meetings. I'm not exactly sure. I think there's a meeting coming up on May the 11th. But I spoke before council back in January that this is AB 32 and SB 375 stuff that's coming up. And we need to keep an eye. I'm not saying that the county and possibly the cities, the three cities and the county are up to dastardly things, but I think it's something that we need to keep an eye on of what's going on is that with this climate change initiatives coming forward. I, for one, do not want to see a time come out when the county or the cities come out and say, well, we've got this plan into effect and we had these meetings and you should have attended. So that's the reason why I'm just coming forward with this information that that it's a regional climate action plan. And I think we as citizens of Redding and the Shasta County need to be aware of what's going on and what the directions are coming from. So, yeah, you're right. There is possibly a problem out there.
Yeah, well, from what I heard in the conversation, and the meeting involved fewer members of each relevant governing body than would be necessary to constitute a quorum. Therefore, I mean, circumventing the Brown Act notice requirements and...
Well, that's right.
Something's fishy.
Well, that's right. The Brown Act would take three members of any one of the governing bodies for the Brown Act to kick in. So if you only have two members of each one of them, then the Brown Act wouldn't kick in, so then they're not publicly noticed.
Plus, I mean, it seems to me that if you have all this stuff happening in closed session, by the time anything gets agendized, it's going to be, this is the deal, take it or leave it.
Yeah, well, I can't, it's not really being in closed session, but it's not really being advertised, is what the problem is.
Hey, Charles, we've got to move on. We have a couple other, phone calls. Thanks a lot for your phone call. Okay, this comes in from the chat line, and the question is, If City Hall workers only work three to four times, I guess, or only work three-quarter time because of worst-case scenarios, what would that mean to existing union contracts?
Well, obviously, we're not there yet. These are the very preliminary stages. And again, the option is layoffs, taking a large segment of City Hall workers and laying them off, which when you're down $3.3 million, that is the normal scenario. Now, what we've tried to consider, and it's in the considering stages today, and council did support it last night, was closing City Hall for one day a week, maybe one day every other week, which would keep those people still working, which we think is a better scenario. We don't know what that would look like in the contracts yet. That will all be determined. They may stay full-time. They may be three-quarter time. Time will tell. We're trying to keep more people working with a severe shortfall.
Yeah, three-quarter time, though, changes a lot of things about how much money the city has to pay into retirement plans and this.
There's definitely impacts. There's no question about
okay.
it. But are those?
I think that's what the question is getting down to.
And he may be correct. The caller may be correct. But the other scenario is a good number of people just simply losing their job. And that's what the mayor's plan introduced. Was how can we save jobs today?
How can we keep as many people here?
And we think that's a better scenario.
Okay. All right, let's go to the phones. Dan, you're on
yeah,
live
good morning.
On Free Fire Radio.
Morning, Carl.
Good morning.
Patrick.
Morning.
Gary.
Good morning.
Question I have is the Costco building seems kind of blurry, and maybe you can elaborate on it.
I was
just wondering how Costco can do a deed restriction on that, which is zoned, I'm assuming, commercial.
Costco, and it's a great question, and it comes up all the time, but I can tell you this, that Costco is going to have a deed restriction on that building. They have that ability to do so. For any potential purchaser, that deed restriction is going to be on that building. They can't afford to have a competitor backfill that building, and they're protecting their own interests, and rightfully so.
I can see that, but I'm just wondering... Costco's big. Who can come in and compete with them? And doesn't that go against the free enterprise system?
No, it does not. In fact, it just goes in the opposite because this is their building, and they get to choose what to do with it. And if they want to choose to put a deed restriction, they can. Now, that comes with a loss of value to the building. When you have a deed restriction of that magnitude, nobody essentially that would buy a 120,000 square foot building now would be able to do ultimately what they wanted. And so the value of the building is greatly diminished. That's where our opportunity comes in. We have...
I understand that.
Okay.
I understand deed restrictions. The confusing part is it's zoned, I would assume, retail commercial. And by doing their deed restriction, they're preventing that from continuing.
Absolutely. They're going to protect their interests. They cannot afford a Sam's Club or one of the other competitors to come back. They will not sell that building without a deed restriction to anyone. They're protecting their interests. If you understand that, these guys have been around a long time. This is a $70 billion company, and they're going to protect their interests. And they have the ability and the rights to do that, as anyone else would if they owned their building outright. And they have to protect their interests.
I understand that. It's just, I thought if something had to be rezoned, I mean, it would have to go through a process.
No,
that's the question that's kind of blurry in my head.
It's still a commercial building. It's just there is a deed restriction, and so they can go hand in hand, and it's been done many times before.
And that was another question, Dan, also coming in from the chat room. Is deed restriction rezoning without actually rezoning?
It's not rezoning.
Okay.
It. The zoning will be the same. There is simply a deed restriction.
Okay. Hey, Dan, thanks for your phone call. We got to get into a break for our last segment. Thank you so much for listening. This is Carl Linda Bob. We're on KCNR 1460, 8:50 in the morning on April the 20th. Patrick Jones, Gary Cadd, our guest, and this is Free Fire Radio. Our 1460, the home of Free Fire Media, Carl Linda Bott, 8:53 in the morning. Our guest, Patrick Jones and Gary Cadd, this portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew. Now, Friday, we're going to be at Tobacco and Brew at noontime, and we're going to finish up our series on emergency preparedness. That's at Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. It's a great place. They support the community. They support our veterans.
Okay. We also want to thank Bob Belongi, has been the producer, just has been an amazing guy today with so many calls coming in and being able to push, you know, and pull all the knobs and do all that. Such a great job. So hats off to Bob. Convention Center. Emails are coming in, Patrick. People say, why haven't we talked about the convention center?
Well, it is a big topic. I too wanted to thank Bob, but for his service on the USS Enterprise. I did not know that he served on the Enterprise, and I had a good friend that served on the Enterprise, and so thank you for your service. And you too, Carl. I think you put a little time in as well in the service.
Convention center. We have a few seconds
convention
left.
Center.
You'll do anything to avoid it, won't you?
Come on, let's go.
The convention center is a real important civic center here for Reading, and all of us that have grown up here know how much we've used that building over years. And it's our building. It's owned by the public, the people. And, and I voted last night to keep the building, even though under these severe conditions, I still think we can keep that building open. And I really believe that the opportunity to privatize it or at least aggressively market that building and make it a functional building so that it can support itself and pay for itself. I don't want the building to go away. I did not support that last night. The budget is bad. There's no question about it. But I'll do just about anything that I can to keep the convention center open. Unfortunately, that was not the consensus of council. And due to the severe budget downfall, they have proposed to temporarily close it, keep it open for a couple of the big events, keep some staff behind to maintain the HVAC and the systems, keep the building from falling in disrepair, but for the most of the events that it would close down. And I oppose that. I was hoping my colleagues would agree that it is bringing more into our city in tax revenue and TOT tax than what we pay into it. And I'd like to see it more aggressively marketed and make it pay for itself. And whether that's a private firm or our own city workers, it wouldn't, I don't have a major opinion in that area. I just want to see the building continue as it is and maybe even do more.
Privatization, would that work in the city and the Civic Center?
I believe there's a partnership that could be had there. And I believe leasing opportunities with different groups are an option. I encourage staff to look at those options to make sure that we could do anything and everything we can to keep that building open for the civic events that are used there today and things that will be used there in the future. If we shut it down, the likelihood of it not coming back online is very strong. And that's what I fear about.
I would agree because it's in disrepair. And as people have talked about, it's going to take anywhere from $2 to $7 million, like, to bring it back up to perfect condition. If you shut it down, it's like anything.
It'll get worse.
It's going to get worse, and we have to pull it out for the 4th of July or Cool April Nights or something like that.
Now, this is not a done deal, Carl, we're at the preliminary stage.
Well, I understand, but I want the people to understand this, that they need to come in and weigh in on this.
Right, and this is the time to weigh in. Now, obviously, the city staff is feeling that there's about a $500,000 or about a $500,000 of TOT monies that could be diverted over into the general fund to help the shortfall. Now, we would have to make up that shortfall in other areas. Thus, the scenario of one day a week, 2 days a month, or so forth may come into question. I think the building is just simply too valuable to close. I think it's too important to the groups that use it. I think it's too important to the citizens and what we do and what we think of Reading. I think of the convention center as playing a major role there. And it may not do the major conventions like it had in the 70s, but it still does community things and community events that are extremely important to us, maybe more important to us today than ever before.
Okay, well, you know, and there's a lot of things that happen there, the logging conference, the, you know, all that. And I just don't know where they would go to. I mean, I don't see, I don't know if there's another event center around here that could take care of all of that.
Well, it would simply leave the city, which would hurt the city.
I also, in an issue here, that the council looked at privatizing the, I guess it was CSAC, looked at privatizing the convention center, and they were doing that, you know, from a national level. I think with the economy we got, that I would really like to see a local firm, a local group, a local person step forward that would look into bringing different programs into the convention center. Something that's local, start a new business. You know, there's 90,000 of us here, and find out just who could run that, because there's a lot of opportunities that I think we're missing to keep that open, to keep the place busy. So I think that's it.
I think it's a good idea, Gary, and I think maybe we should take a look at that. Okay. Thank you so much for being here today.
Both Gary Cadd and Patrick Jones, thanks so much. And our Survival Preparedness Week tomorrow, our guest will be
the Red Cross. They're going to come in at 7:30 and be talking about, you know, emergency venues right here in Reading that the Red Cross will be opening up, their checklist. But also then at 8 o'clock, Police Chief Peter Hansen will be here, and he's going to be talking about what happens during an emergency. And then plus there's going to be a number of other questions, I'm sure, about Costco and going into for the police station. And you're right, he has said several times on our show he's all for this refit.
And gentlemen, thank you. Like it or not, you always keep us informed with what's the latest information that's happened at the City Hall.
That's right, and thanks a lot to our listeners for jumping in here. And just remember, it's the good guys against the bad guys. Which are you?
You've been listening to KCNR Shasta Reading.